The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
In another horrific loss of civilian life, Russian missiles struck a multi-story apartment building in Odessa early this morning. Now, this comes after at least 20 people were killed in Russia's missile attack on a crowded Ukrainian shopping mall earlier this week. In good news for Ukraine, the strategically important Snake Island was reclaimed by Ukrainian forces after peppering Russian troops with heavy artillery. Now, to talk about the ongoing war, we're joined by a member of the Ukraine Parliament, Inna Sovsun. Inna, good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you too.
It's rare enough, I suppose, these days that you're getting good news from the Ukrainian side of the conflict, but Snake Island is important.
It is important. It is important for two reasons. First of all, strategically, the very fact that we regain control and that the Russians do not control it any longer means that they have less opportunity to attack us from sea. We are able to take back some of the control over the coastal line. And that, of course, is important from the military perspective. But then on another level, on a symbolic level, that is even more important because there is a story that has been very widely reported this year in Ukraine, but I think worldwide as well. During the very first days of war, Russian warship came to the Snake Island and asked the people who were defending the Snake Island to surrender. And the defenders of the island said, and I will quote very, very mildly, Russian warship go to hell. The quote was a bit rude, I will not quote that directly. But that phrase became the symbol and the motto of the Ukrainian resistance altogether. Unfortunately, of course, all those defenders have been captured by the Russians, but they didn't give up. They didn't surrender. And for that matter, because of this event, because those defenders showed such great resistance, willingness to fight against Russians, despite the Russian forces being overwhelming, the Snake Island became another level of importance, symbolic importance. So now regaining control over this is a big win for us on different levels.
Mm. Now, what kind of equipment will Ukraine be able to put on Snake Island to, if you like, give cover to any military activity it might, or indeed even exporting of food it might try to do?
Well, that truly will be decided by the military command. Whether we shall actually put any equipment there overall is under question right now. But of course, the major things we need in that area is air defense systems, because the majority of the missiles that are hitting Ukrainian towns, both in the south, then also in the north, in Kyiv, they're coming from that territory, from the Black Sea, from Crimea. And that is why I think it would be strategically correct to think about some sort of air defense capabilities. But again, that will be a question to the military command. Well, they will have to decide on that.
The terror from Russia continues. Now, there are some people say it's because they're using old Soviet-era missiles that are not terribly accurate, that's why these attacks are happening on a shopping mall and on an apartment building in Odessa last evening, that they're aiming somewhere else, but not many of us find that credible.
Well, I'm grateful for a realistic assessment of what is indeed going on. I'll tell you this, the attack on the shopping mall in Kremenchuk is an example, a great example of exactly of what you said, because they said that they were not meaning to target the residential area, the shopping center, the civilian target. But the truth is that several kilometers around that shopping center is residential area. There is nothing else apart from residential area and shops and cafes around there. And still they hit it. So they cannot pretend that they were aiming at any military facility. There is not a single military facility in the vicinity of the shopping center. It's just residential area and the shopping center. So apparently what they're doing is they're trying to terrorize the people. They're trying to inflict terror on the Ukrainians who are trying to get back to some sense of normality in our lives, trying to get back to their cities in central Ukraine. Yet the Russians are hitting us with a missile saying that it's not safe wherever you are in Ukraine. And I think this is the main goal, whatever they say publicly. But the goal is exactly to make sure that all civilians are terrified of living in Ukrainian cities. But also important to say is that they are actually getting the opposite result. Instead of being scared, people are getting more angry. People are getting more willing to donate to the Ukrainian army, to help our army to fight back and not to give up, not to surrender. So they're actually achieving the opposite result of what they're aiming at from the Ukrainian people.
The figures given for losses dead in the Russian army are around 30,000 people. They seem to have an inexhaustible supply, though, of conscripts they can draw on from the far reaches of what used to be the old Soviet Empire. Ukrainian losses are not so widely reported, but there must be many, many soldiers killed and injured every day on your side.
Indeed. Unfortunately, particularly the last month, we are losing lots of soldiers, but then also civilians. But it's important to understand that the question of superiority in this war is not so much about the number of personnel. It's about the number of weapons that is available on both sides. And that is the major problem for us right here. We can mobilize as many people as Russians because our people are willing to get into fight. We still have queues. We still have lines of those who are willing to volunteer to go to the army, while Russians have to force people to go to the army. So we can mobilize people. The question is that no matter how many people you mobilize, if Russians have a 5-to-1 superiority in terms of artillery, the number of people we mobilize is just making no sense. So the major question right now is to mobilize international support for Ukraine and to make sure that all those weapons that have been promised to Ukraine will actually be delivered. And unfortunately, that is the major problem right now. That is something that we are not seeing. All those promises so far are mainly still the promises. And unfortunately, we are not getting as much artillery as we have been asking for. And that is the major problem today.
Do you know what is causing the blockage? I mean, we were told, you know, a country might have so many howitzers, but they might not be battle ready, for instance, and then personnel have to be trained to use them.
Well, right now we have much more personnel that is ready and prepared and trained to use howitzers and other types of equipment than we do have the equipment. So now the problem is not on our side in terms of personnel. The problem is with the delivery. And the problems come from two sources. First of all, of course, the logistics is extremely complicated. So we understand that part. But then also sometimes the delays are of bureaucratic nature, of political nature, or we are hearing things like, let's see how well you're using the weapons that we have provided you with, and then we'll decide whether to give you more. But that is just making no sense because we need big numbers of weapons in order to show the result. Because getting a small number against a huge number of Russian weapons is just nonsensical. So in some cases, the delays are due to political reasons and bureaucratic reasons, unfortunately.
Now, you may have heard the quotation from Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. He has said, a new iron curtain is descending between Russia and the West. Now, it's an iron curtain of Putin's making because, you know, buying their oil and gas, trading with them and so on, was, in spite of the invasion and the annexation of Crimea, still going on until February the 24th of this year.
Yes, unfortunately. And that is the reason why we are extremely upset, because I wish at the level of sanctions that we're seeing today, that we saw those 8 years ago when Putin annexed Crimea. That is when the Iron Curtain should have been established. But unfortunately, for 8 years, Europe saw it as acceptable to trade with Russia, to buy Russian gas, to buy Russian oil, to buy other sources of energy and other goods from Russia. So it's about time to establish the Iron Curtain and to make sure that there are no direct contacts between the civilized world and a barbarian country of Russia. Russia needs to be left isolated fully. And that is why we keep on talking about the full-scale oil and gas embargo, which unfortunately has not been established as of yet. So now, while Western leaders are saying that they are willing to provide Ukrainians with the weapons, they're actually providing Russians with billions every single day as payment for the energy sources.
Now, the positives for Ukraine, I suppose the accession of Sweden and Finland to NATO, which will push NATO's boundaries into closer proximity to any ambitions that Putin might have to invade those countries. If they invade Finland, once again, as they did before, of course, and took a Finnish city and kept it. But if they do it again, they're invading a NATO country, and that should offer a little bit more comfort on that flank.
Yes, we are very happy for our friends from Sweden and Finland. This happiness and this feeling is bittersweet a little bit for us, truth be told, because it took Finland and Sweden 3 months to get into NATO, from them declaring their wish to join NATO to actually being joined. 3 months. Ukraine has been asking to join NATO for over 10 years now, and we still haven't got a yes. While I believe the whole world now knows that Ukrainian army is actually a great benefit to any alliance, because our army is one of the strongest in the world, and that's why it manages to keep Russians away as much as possible. So again, we are happy for them, but we also want to understand that there is a perspective for Ukraine to join as well. And that is the job both for us here in Ukraine, and we understand it probably wouldn't happen as long as we don't have full control of our territory. But I still believe this is the way to go. This is where we should be moving in order to ensure safety, security for our children at least.
The war, people thought it might be quick. Certainly Putin thought it might be quick to replace the administration in Kiev. That did not happen and will not happen. How long are Ukrainians thinking now that this war will last?
Until the victory for Ukraine. That is the only solution that we are willing to accept. How long that will take? Well, unfortunately, now we are understanding, as unpleasant it might be, that it can take months or even years. But we don't really have a choice except for keep on fighting. Of course, we can hope for a miracle to happen, for Putin to die, for a change of regime in Russia, or any other major change. But if nothing major changes in Russia, nothing major will change on our side either. We have to keep on fighting for our territory and for our people, even if it takes years, unfortunately.
Inna, thank you very much for joining us. Inna Sovsun, member of the Ukraine Parliament.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.